you're interested in how highly successful investors overcome limitations and become unstoppable forces of success, you're in the right place. The Conscious Investor Podcast features weekly conversations with real estate investing experts and delivers a Monday mindset episode to help launch your week with intention. If you believe success is for everyone willing to think, then do, these conversations will be your weekly rocket fuel. Welcome back, Conscious Investors. I am so excited. I am thrilled, actually thrilled, to have Andrew with me today. As Andrew and I have gone back, I think we met, correct me if I'm wrong, at maybe Brian Briscoe's Friday networking session. We're sounds in this breakout right. room. Right? Doesn't sound about right. Anyway, yeah. Super cool, super fun. And then, of course, the happiest place on earth, LinkedIn, connects all people who really want to elevate, you know, whatever they're doing professionally. If they want to elevate and connect with other people who are at that same or trying to grow, that. So I see you all the time over on LinkedIn, and I love your posts. But it was super cool because recently we were at an event and we actually got to like see each other and like, oh my gosh, this person's amazing. Not, it's not just, you know, in that transition of like meeting people in person is so powerful, but there's so much more to unpack. But so I could go on and just talk about you in front of you, but I'm not going to do that. I'm going to like say, hi, Andrew, welcome to the Conscious Investor.
Thanks, Julie. I'm really glad to be here and just excited to have the opportunity to take a little bit of time and talk with you and your audience.
Well, you do a lot of really cool things, and you and I both have a shared faith and a determination to serve people, to serve people well. And one thing that really stood out to me was how you work with your own family unit to, you know, support your residents and just bridging those gaps. And I would love, you know, for you to just share a little bit more about the thinking behind that and how you go supporting your residents. I suppose that means we should probably talk about, you know, how you're investing right now at this moment. Sure. So that you can support residents.
Yeah. Yeah. I can start with that. Two and a half years ago, I did a couple hard money deals, and I was just like, this is so impersonal. I'm not like entirely opposed to that. And that's how I got into some of the passive syndication deals that I'm in. You know, I just started looking into ways to do things passively. But, you know, anyone that says real estate is completely passive is just lying. Like, there's still a lot of things you need to do. So anyhow, I did a few passive deals, which for the most part, I'm trusting people like you and good teams to manage properties out of state. You know, I've learned a lot from that just because I am also a commercial roofer and doing some of the due diligence. So I do get to see behind the scenes and learn while I'm doing it, but I have the choice to do that if I want to. It's very passive. On the active side, though, we have one corporate rental, which was my first VA loan house. And then we just did a house hack in Golden, Colorado, a year ago now. And our tenants that we had in our apartment just moved out. And so we're setting that up as a corporate rental. That's actually where I'm at right now. Got the Murphy bed behind me. and this is going to be a great work-in place for people if they need it. And this house hack also has a shop in the back. So we ultimately have three, you know, more active units, the shop, this apartment, and my house in Roxborough, which is about 35 minutes south of me. And yeah, I've been doing that now for a little over a year.
That's absolutely amazing. And by the way, okay, so much to go into on that, but I just have to high five Golden, Colorado, because it's such a cute little town. And I mean, hey, you've got the Coors Brewery right there, access to all the ski resorts, and you don't have to worry about the 25 traffic and everything trying to get out of Denver. You're already there at the base of the foothills. So I just have to
acknowledge I never, awesome. I never knew how amazing Golden was. When I moved to Colorado, I was in Colorado Springs. We moved to Denver right around the time my wife and I got married in 2012, coming up on the 10-year anniversary.
Congrats.
And the two places I looked was Golden and Ken Carl. I couldn't afford either. So I lived in an apartment in Cancaro for the first year of our marriage, and then we moved further south. But yeah, being here in Golden, I'm close to everything. You like mountain biking. There's so many great mountain biking trails that I can just ride to super easy. I can do them with the kids. A lot of fun. And then our shop, actually two-thirds of the shop is run by a guy who's making right now stems, but ultimately hubs, bike pedals, all kinds of stuff. So it's just it's a really great environment for someone who loves to be outdoors and on a bike. So I love it.
Oh, that just made me really excited. I'm going to be out in Denver a couple of times over the next 6 months. So I'm thinking somehow I have to figure out how to travel with my bike, you know, that far.
Yeah, definitely.
I know I can rent a bike, but.
Jesse travels every time. My tenant travels every time with his bike. He loves his bike. He's got like a bike box and he's gotten really used to it. So there's definitely options. I can get you guys in touch if you want to look into that.
I do. I actually, it's not a want, it's a need. It's a necessity. So I'm like, no, please put me in touch because
yeah, absolutely. It's
connected to this. So, you know, you have these, and I know that at different points, I mean, you've had, I want to go into, there are like so many ways I want to go. I'm going to stay on one path and then we'll go back. But, but going into, you know, just some of the ways that you've supported, you know, the residents that you've had over the short term, I know that you've incorporated, and some people would be hesitant to do this, but, you know, in our conversations, you've incorporated your faith in how you engage your residents. And I think that's interesting because a lot of people feel that there has to be this stoicism behind them, and that they have to have this, like, well, you're the tenant. They don't even call them a resident, and you're the tenant, you're here, I'm here. And I would never even consider, you know, usurping my beliefs into your world in any way. So, like, can you just tell us, you know, share the thinking behind that and how you approach it?
Sure. I mean, that all probably started back in 2016. I was listening to a radio DJ on a Christian channel, and they had said something about, you know, you say Jesus is the Lord of your life, and yet you'll talk about literally anything. You know, at that time it was election, Super Bowl, whatever. And they were saying, you know, you'll talk about the Super Bowl, election, which candidate you love or hate. You know, you'll talk about, you know, right now, the Oscars or Grammys or whatever, you know, the crazy stuff in the world. But you won't ever mention your faith. That seems crazy if that's the most important thing in your life. So from that point on, I was continually challenged both just in my faith and by my wife and in my own heart, just that I need to make that a priority and practice what I preach. And so for the most part, I would say God has brought into any conversation in my life. So our internet on all our houses is Jesus Saves, John 3:16. And, you know, we have several of our tenants that come to church with us, you know, certainly some that are not interested at all. And, you know, most recently, the tenants that moved out of this apartment were actually on staff at our church and are headed to Indonesia as missionaries and ultimately became some of our best friends. But it was just a really amazing opportunity to not charge them market rent, allow them to be in a place that they would never be able to afford. And we just got to pour into their life. They had their first child at the same time we had our third. So my wife and her just really bonded, and my wife was able to walk through some of those things with her as a first-time mom. And I mean, all of that's just such a joy to be able to give back. And, you know, when you approach it in a holistic way and you're just kind and loving, you know, people get past the stereotypes of what Christians are and really understand what it really means and are far more open in my experience. It's not always perfect, but on a whole, you know, they really enjoy the experience and certainly don't leave saying, like, I never want to hang out with people like that again.
that, you know, you can have that experience with anybody where it's like, I just don't want to hang out with them again. It doesn't have to be faith-based or anything. You can just have that experience. But I love that you're looking at this in a holistic way. And I think there's a growing number of investors that are starting to look at things in a, what is the impact? And so I actually, you know, have the Impact Investing Network that meets, you know, the last Monday of every month, because we're looking for ways, like, how do you bridge the gap between, is there even a gap or a chasm between purpose and profits? And how do we marry those two together so that they're working in harmony to, you know, better the world and the lives of, you know, the residents that we do have. So I love that. I love that you're able to do that and to share your faith. And I love that also, you know, just that, what is it you're actually talking about? Are you talking about what's closest to your heart? And when, I mean, there's having that level of congruency in life. That's a super high level of integrity. And I really admire that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thanks. It certainly hasn't always been easy at times, but I am really grateful for the path that I've been put on, and wouldn't change it for the world.
Definitely. Definitely. Ed, you're super fun to hang out with. So I can't imagine anybody being like, you never want to hang out.
Yeah. My wife's definitely the better of the better half of the equation. And she's an incredible host as well. You know, we have a college group on Thursday nights at our house and life group on Tuesdays. So we stay busy. She usually is sending people home with, you know, goodie bags of food. And, you know, I can't imagine trying to prepare, clean, do all the stuff she does. So it's certainly not all me by any means, and couldn't do it without my wife.
Well, okay. That's interesting, because you guys have created this lifestyle, right, where she's able to do that. And so she has the time, the energy, the resources. She has the conglomeration of resources. Was that something that you intentionally pursued, or how did you create that?
Yeah. So right before our first son was born, he's five and a half now. My wife was just having a hard time doing work and, you know, being pregnant. She was at a safe house for abused victims. Really heavy work to be dealing with on top of, you know, having a baby. So at that point, we just said, hey, we can make this work. It's going to be tighter. But let's, you know, let's have you stop working. And, you know, at first the plan was to potentially go back, but, or find something else after, but she just really enjoyed being home. And so we started taking steps to continue to save more, to figure out how to make everything work with just one income. And being in sales, I think that's my favorite thing about sales is, you know, I don't really have a cap. You know, if this sales job's not working, I can go find another one. It's all relational. It's all, you know, my performance is what dictates. So, you know, since my son was born and a little bit before that, I was continuing to improve in sales and just hone my craft there. And so now we have the means to keep my wife home. And a lot of the rental income and passive investing has gotten to a place where probably the time my wife left, we have replaced that income. I'm not quite to replacing what I make now. But yeah, we've made a lot of progress. And so it's been very intentional, but it's also been a slower process than I expected as far as replacement of income.
Yeah. It's interesting. I have this expression I've adopted. I'm sure it's not unique to me, but I've just found over the last several months, courage is always rewarded. And you take these, and I can look back over my life, and for my husband and I, a lot of it is stepping out in faith and just following something that we believe God is leading us into. Mm-hmm. And it's scary. I always say you put your toes in the water, and that's when they have to be in the water, not just on the edge. Yeah. And then you see God in action. And so it's been exciting to see that, but it takes courage to do that. It took courage for us to like step back and shift from the teaching world. And it's interesting you mentioned that, because the CAP. So that was something recently I spoke to a group of eighth graders about entrepreneurship and, you know, what I do as an investor. And it was interesting because I told them the sky is the limit. And when you're an entrepreneur, I'm like, there is no cap. When I was an, you know, public school educator, there was a cap. I could see exactly mm-hmm. where I'd be year to year. They could freeze people there. They could actually decrease. You might get mm-hmm. a little raise, you know, but I had zero input on how that was going to sure. work. And so yeah. it is really liberating when you say, okay, it's on me. If you're a driven, motivated person, hey, whatever I want to put into this, it's going to happen and materialize.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I mean, sales, I think the biggest thing that I usually run into is I'm out selling production, or, you know, like now for cars, my brother's still selling cars. I used to do that. And, you know, the supply chain shortage is out of control. So they're potentially a year out of stuff they've sold. That is a long time to wait. And so usually the cap that I ran into was I'm selling faster than people could produce new homes or roofs in this case, or, you know, cars back in the day. And so I think that's the beautiful thing about entrepreneurship and why I opened, you know, my LLC a couple of years ago, was I just realized I still ultimately had some sort of cap in sales because other people were holding me up. But if it's my own business, I can figure out, or I can hire the right person to figure out how to continue to grow how I want to grow. So
that's really, really exciting. Okay, let's go down that path a little bit. What is it that you do? I mean, you can work nationally, and that just blows my mind. So why don't yeah. you describe it? What is it you actually do?
Yeah. So I'm originally, I think my title was like sales executive or something. I think they've moved it to business development, but I am a business developer for a roofing company that when I started was 7 employees. Now we have over 130. I don't know the exact count. Like literally yesterday, I got an email for a new person in Colorado and a new person in Texas. So I don't know our exact number, but somewhere over 130 employees. I started just local in Colorado. It was a complete God thing. The biggest hailstorm in Colorado's history, $2.3 billion in damage, happened within the first 30 days of me working at the company. And that year I ended up doing 10 million in sales and 2 million in the first 30 days of being with the company. And my 5-year anniversary is actually in 4 days. Kind of took a company that did 6 million in revenue the year prior to triple that revenue and continuing to grow. And now we have an investment firm behind us so that allowed us to grow. In 2020, I was having a hard time sourcing materials. I lost a really big deal here in Colorado that was, would have been absolutely game changing. But I lost it because I was talking to the property management company instead of the owners. So that was the realization to me, hey, we already have this like regional, national reach. Why am I not dealing with these investor owners that I'm already with, like from passive investing? And so it kind of just merged my two interests, work and, you know, my friends, the people that I learned from, and allowed me to work with them and basically talk real estate all day. And I happen to sell roofing stuff and make money so I can invest in more deals. So it worked out okay.
Okay. But that totally falls in line with this philosophy. And I wasn't raised with this. And I would say over the last year and a half, I've really understood this better. We're created. God created us, designed us to have this certain drives, traits, personalities, and mm-hmm. attributes that make us, you know, really excel at different things. And when I'm finding the more I lean into those, the more fulfilled and satisfied everything is. Like it's just this beautiful, harmonious thing that I felt like before, no, work is work. I always enjoyed work because, I mean, you might as well just have fun. I mean, I'll have fun doing most anything. It could be drudgery, but somehow I'm going to make it fun, right? That's just how I am. But a lot of times people approach work and it's like, oh, well, that's work. I got to go to work. And I'm like, I get to go to work. I love what I do. What are you talking about? But that's also pursuing the things that I love. It's amazing how that is also rewarded. And like you're saying, I get to talk, you know, you're like, I'm talking real estate. I'm with people that are my friends, people that I love, people I invest with, and I can support them with this great roofing product.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think you said it very well. I grew up in school. I did it fine in high school, but I didn't enjoy it. And I always felt like there was a struggle to concentrate. I was just good at taking tests. You know, my parents had me tested for ADD or ADHD, whatever. And they were like, no, I think this is an attitude thing. Like, there is no doubt in my mind that I have ADHD. However, those, you know, that has allowed me to focus on other things. And, you know, now as an adult, I'm figuring out, you know, like, oh, I was reading too slow a pace and I couldn't concentrate. Now I listen to everything at 3, 3.5 speed and I'm reading along with it. And my reading comprehension's gone up and everything else. And it's just like, you got to figure out what works for you. And then as you do that and lean into the strengths that God's given you and how he's uniquely knit you in your mother's womb to be, you're going to excel and, you know, finally sit in the place where you're exactly where God wanted you the entire time. So, I totally agree. And, you know, I still have a little bit, you know, more growing to do. I think it's going to continue till I die, but, I've really enjoyed, you know, the journey and seeing, the progression as I continue to lean into the God-given abilities God's given me.
Yeah. That's my grandma told me. She was in her 90s and she's, you know, hey, so, don't worry. You'll never have it all figured out. And honestly, I think she mentioned that to me when I was in my probably, like 27, 28 years of age. And it really impacted me because for all those years, I thought I had, there was this point of arrival, this destination where I'm going to have it all figured out and put together. And to have, you know, somebody that's extremely experienced in life, late 80s, early 90s, say, I still feel like I'm 26. I see the world as 26, but I've always progressed. And so I'm just like, what? It just shattered and opened up this whole world of possibility of like, oh, there isn't a destination. It's just going to be this progression of, you know, growing and evolving. And as this is going to be great.
Yeah, absolutely. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, super cool. Okay, I have to get back to the corporate rental because that is a very unique space. I have some other investor friends that are involved in corporate rentals, and it's a very good way of serving corporations because it's essential, but I have a lot of opinions on it that are very favorable. I'd love to hear, you know, how did you get involved? How do you even track down and build those relationships with corporations so that they know you exist and that you're not just an Airbnb or something?
Sure. So I guess I'm a little bit of a hybrid in that sense. So when I was looking at buying this property that I'm in now, I was talking with my mortgage guy almost daily. I was talking to my real estate guy. And my mortgage guy said, well, why don't you look at getting Lockheed Martin as an extended client. I was 5 minutes from there. They use what's called, I think it's the GS4 pay scale. It's a government contracting like per diem. And so you can look up and see literally how much people are going to get in a zip code for extended stays. So I looked into that and I thought I would have no problem. I mean, I was reaching out to HR people, you name it. I'm probably connected with, you know, 500 people in Lockheed at this point because I was trying to get specifically with them. And I never was able to figure it out, whether it was just because of COVID and like people weren't in the office anymore or what. I'm not really sure, but I couldn't figure that out. And so along that journey, I found a company that just kind of advertises to corporations in general. And so it's similar to Airbnb, but you know, you have minimum stays. It's an advertisement just for those type of people. It gives me a little bit more freedom to get, you know, other companies that are just moving their people to a certain metro area. to have their relocation packages fulfilled through something like that instead of a hotel. So I'm coming up on 14 months with my first one. And I thought it was 12 days, but I just looked, I only had 10 days of vacancy in 14 months. Just got a new tenant in.
Wow.
At the same time that these guys left here in the apartment that I'm at now. And so we're finishing, you know, getting all the furniture assembled and put together here. And then we'll list this one as well. When I had the 10 days vacancy, they were mostly in a row, like 8 of them are in a row. And so I was like, maybe I'll list on Airbnb as well. And I think you still have the opportunity to make that happen. But it's for me, at least, as you know, managing a job, family, and multiple listings, it was difficult to manage multiple platforms. So in my experience, it hasn't worked, but I'm sure if like you had a property manager or someone that is handling everything, they can probably do that with no problem. But for me, it was just like, this is a lot. I'm getting a lot of messages on multiple different properties at the same time. Some people are trying to book on Airbnb, and then I have someone going through background on the corporate rental, which is, you know, they're different. And the corporate rental, usually I can change the contract, but usually they have an option to stay month to month after. And I leave that open because here in Colorado, it's so hard to find a house.
Yes.
Like my first tenant was 3 months was what they said. They ended up staying 7 months. So I think that's been valuable for people and gives me an additional reason for people to want to stay, where Airbnb, you get it on the calendar, that's it. Someone else can book right after you. So
that's incredibly fascinating. When you're comparing, let's look at this on the investor front. If you're comparing corporate rental to short-term rental to just running, you know, navigating it as a, you know, year-long lease that you're signing mm-hmm. with a resident, what's this look like monetarily? You know,
yeah,
what's the upside?
So my house in Roxborough, I obviously have the most data on because I've done it longer. The general rule of thumb for corporate rentals is it's 50% above market rent as long as you're reasonably furnished. So our market rent in that area, I bought the place for $260. I owe a little more than that now because I refinanced to buy this property, but I still have a very low mortgage there. And I am getting $4,600 a month. So I'm actually closer to double market rent. There is about $2,600. So not quite double, but, never having an issue renting, still going very quickly. So, I mean, to me, it's great because you're still having typically higher end clients because, you know, corporations paying for them. And you don't have the constant turnover and the, you know, increased vacancy of Airbnb. Like I believe here in Denver market, Airbnb, traditional Airbnb, the vacancy is close to 60%. So like, yeah, sure, maybe I'd make $6,000 at that property, but I have more vacancy. It right. ultimately means I would possibly make less. So at least for me, it's been phenomenal. Here in Golden, honestly, I think I will at least get 50%, and this is a 2-1. I'll probably get $3,500 for a 2-bed, 1-bath, which is, you know, phenomenal. And again, maybe I can list like for a $5,000, you know, with Airbnb, but I would expect that vacancy. So it seems like less work. You still have the opportunity to get in and make sure they're not tearing up the property. You're not dealing with, you know, eviction stuff of traditional rents and insurance, all that other stuff to protect you as well. So I know it.
I like the idea. It seems like a really good hybrid with, you know, a short-term type, like it's really a middle ground between short-term rentals and traditional leases where, I mean, they're staying longer. So you're not having that turnover of the Airbnb space, which honestly, that can be really rough. I stayed at a Airbnb down in Houston, Texas, when I took my robotics team to the World Championship. And I mean, that place had some, It needed some immediate attention, and it was like a very nice place. It was advertised as a very nice place, and you get there and you're like, the door handle is falling off, you know?
Yeah.
And apparently some people were partying the weekend before we got there or something. I have no idea, but you know, it's like there were all these question marks that could happen in that space. But when you're working with professionals who are, you know, I mean, they're there. Obviously, they want to maintain a reputation, and it's just going to go across the board when people make transitions.
Yeah. Well, plus I get, a 30-day minimum. They have to let me know when they're leaving. So it's easier to schedule the cleaners for after, get in there at the same time as them and make sure, like you said, there's not those broken faucets or door handles or whatever. Yeah, you're going to run into less issue. I mean, the constant turnover right now, I think one of the hardest things has been finding cleaners for Airbnb in different markets, like the mountain markets here in Colorado. The people can't afford to live there. And so these cleaners are like, yeah, right. If I don't like you, I'm never working with you again, and go good luck, you know?
Yeah.
So they're way overpaying. They basically kind of just have to hope that these cleaners like you and do a good job. And if they don't, you're kind of out of luck. So
if somebody's looking for an entrepreneurial opportunity, there is yours. Go to resort communities and start a cleaning service.
There you go. Yeah. Not for me. I don't enjoy cleaning, but someone else can do that. Yeah.
Exactly.
Free tip from Julie.
Exactly. No, my a really super awesome woman I used to rock climb with way back when we were, you know, late teens, early 20s. Turns out she's in real estate now, in a resort community in California. And she is, vertically integrated her business. And so she actually has all the services within her company. Just
awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. That's yeah. It is definitely doable. So if you're listening to this and you're looking for that little, how am I going to go live in Vail? Well, maybe you can start this company. I don't know.
Exactly. That's awesome.
That's really awesome. I was definitely curious about, you know, how you were navigating that, because I've heard different people, you know, even using arbitrage, and I have some friends that are doing arbitrage in New York City and using this model of corporate leases. I mean, it's just, the sky is the limit with this. With your level of creativity, anything can happen, which is really exciting.
Yeah. And, you know, everybody talks about corporate rental or midterm as like traveling nurses. There's so many other things besides just traveling nurses. Like I have looked at some of the traveling nurses sites. Honestly, they're kind of annoying, like how they're all worded and what they're looking for. So to me personally, it just isn't the right fit for me. It may be for someone that's right by a hospital. That makes a lot of sense. I just think that people get so narrow-minded and they're just looking at, oh, traveling nurses is the only like medium stay option. It's like, no, those guys don't make that much money. So there's definitely people that are willing to pay a lot more for your property. So,
yeah. And definitely depending on your location. And I would say even in my little rural community, there could still be opportunities for having a corporate, you know, a corporate rental. Believe it or not.
Oh, absolutely. So especially with people working from home. So they may say, hey, we used to work in the office. Now we're letting you move wherever you want. We'll pay for that. And then you get to work from home. So there's still those opportunities wherever it is. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Andrew, you are awesome. Wait, before we go, I was going to wrap this up and I'm like, no, I want to circle back to the roofing company, you know, the business there. And what does that model look like? Like, for example, I did not realize, and this is shame on me for not realizing, that you could do anything across the nation until we met at, you know, in Denver, you know, a couple months ago. So what does that look like? If somebody were to, they're like listening and like, man, Andrew seems super cool. I've got this, you know, complex that I know that we're going to be doing some CapEx on, and what would those steps look like, and where do you guys reach, and how does that process work?
Yeah, so it can vary region to region. It can also vary on the size. So like, for example, In rural markets where our crews are going to have to, you know, stay at a hotel or something for an extended stay, it doesn't make a lot of sense for a national company to come out and do a $50,000 roofing project. The economies of scale are just not there. So typically, I like anything over 20 units. If it's flat roof, and closer to 40 units if it's shingles, just for the price point. And then we work with people. First, we're going to start touching base with them and see, like, hey, what's your genuine need? Have you already bought the property? Are you sure you need this? And then we also offer due diligence. So I can come out beforehand. Obviously there's a cost associated with that, to look at all the exteriors. Most people are spending money on due diligence anyway. It's a very minimal cost to know, hey, I need to replace these roofs within the 5 to 7 years that we own this, or if this is a long-term hold and we don't plan on getting rid of it, when should I budget this? And what's the current rate that, this last year, in the last 6 months, roofing materials have gone up almost 40%. I mean, it's out of control. So we do a combination of things, but I would say on a whole, anything over, $100,000 typically, for a roofing project in rural areas. If it's in the markets where we actually have offices, like Utah, we have two in Texas, Florida, Tennessee, and Colorado, those are super easy and we can look at anything. We have crews all over the place in those areas, but any of those areas where we're having to travel, it can vary slightly. So, for me, I think what usually gets people interested in working with someone like me is I have a much broader understanding of real estate investing than, the traditional roofer. We are typically within 1-2% of any local person. So we're not just getting destroyed. We're not way more expensive. And people are like, yeah, right, I'm not going to work with you. You have too much overhead. So we're right within those margins where it's like, yeah, I'd much rather go with someone I trust that knows what they're doing and is going to have the right oversight, OSHA compliance, and all that other stuff. So
nice.
Also, I would say, it is not at all your fault that you didn't know I was national. I don't like publicly advertise it very often. I enjoy talking about real estate so much that I'm just like, when people are ready to work with me, it happens. And I've never been that pushy salesperson, so no fault of yours at all. Definitely my fault.
Oh, that's interesting. The book club I facilitate, the 5-week book and networking club, is currently reading a book called To Sell Is Human by Daniel Pink. And a very nice. Good book, just really going into we are all selling, but he lays a nice foundation about pushy salespeople at the beginning and actually why they can't exist anymore. And why the markets have shifted so significantly, because there isn't any space for it. So much information out there that oftentimes the consumer understands more than the person selling. Because the information is out there.
I'll have to add that to the list.
Add it to the list. The first two chapters are really dry. I'm just letting you know. It's good. Foundation. It's a little painful. I doubted myself for those first two chapters. It does pick up after that. So, and I have no doubt that the remainder of the book is going to be phenomenal. It came as a recommendation from someone who is like every recommendation has become a cornerstone book in my life. That's why I grinned and bared the two chapters of torture. I'm like, okay, but every book has turned out to be really important in my life, so I'm going to stick with this.
Absolutely. That's awesome.
Yeah. Hey, speaking of books, and you're consuming a lot of books and all the time, what is, one book? I don't typically ask people this, but what's one book aside from the Bible? I feel like that's a given for you and I, aside from that, what's one book that was just like, boom, eye-opening?
I think this year so far was Who Not How. I was just, blown away at he mentioned something about, how procrastination is actually wisdom. And it's really, I shouldn't be doing this. I should have someone else be doing that. And, you know, for me, like I said, the ADHD, like doing stuff that just not in my skill house or skill set or wheelhouse, was, I mean, very eye opening. And it's like, okay, now I need to hire someone to hire the who's, yes. And start doing that, because I've been holding myself up in those ways because I keep trying to depend on myself to do it when there's other people that are just way better at doing the things I don't want to do. And I've known that for a while, but sometimes you just need that, you know, kick in the teeth, if you will, to wake you up. Yeah. So, yeah.
Love it. That's been, a concept that I've been working with on my own. And then he comes out with this book and I'm thinking, whoa, okay. I haven't read it yet. It's slated on my list for this year. Currently my family and I just took a trip to Seattle, which we drove. It's, you know, 7 hours away. Went to go mountain biking. It was phenomenal, and eat seafood. I'm still in this little rush from it, but you can tell because I'm talking about it on a podcast that won't air.
Yeah.
It's going to be like, that was like forever ago, Julie. But not that it won't air, but it'll be a while.
Yeah.
All that to say, we started listening to Jocko's Extreme Ownership.
Finished that as well. It's awesome. That's a good one.
Just felt like, wow, everyone needs to read. My husband and I were walking this morning. We were talking about that book. I mean, it's just one of those, I think for us collectively, and our kids are at that age where, especially a 13-year-old boy who's really into guns and warfare and things like that and understanding. I mean, like,
yeah,
this is speaking his language. So I'm like,
no, Jocko's, yeah, he's awesome. The other one that my wife and I both read, I read first and then talked to my wife about reading it, was not Ruthless Elimination of Hurry, same author, Garden City, John Mark Comer. And it's essentially just about how God intended life to be before the fall. And so it's ultimately like taking some of N.T. Wright's writings, like Surprised by Hope, and this idea that heaven's not just singing in the clouds, kumbaya, blah, blah, blah. But it's this garden city, like coming back to the garden, but with the talents and the things that God's given us to cultivate the earth. And yeah, ultimately talking about Sabbath rest as well, which is also somewhat what Ruthless Elimination of Hurry was about as well. So both are good books, but Garden City has been really good.
Nice. I'm definitely going to look that up.
Yeah.
And Andrew, it's been like super fun to hang out with you to record a session and everything. Where can people reach you? What's your favorite spot for people to connect up? They're like, dude, you're super cool. I just want to go mountain bike with you. You're super cool. Let's talk roofs. You're super cool. Let's talk about, you know, corporate housing. You're super cool. Let's just talk.
All right. Sounds good. Yeah. LinkedIn is probably the easiest way to find me. All of my contact info is there. You know, anytime I do one of those security things, so like, what are you doing? Your profile is way too public. However, that's where I make most of my income. So you can always find me on LinkedIn. I'm there. My number's there. You know, connect with me, and always happy to meet like-minded people and learn from people that have gone before me and know way more than I do, because I still have a lot to learn. So happy to connect.
That's awesome. To you amazing conscious investors out there, make sure to take it the next step. Don't be timid. Don't be shy. Whatever it is that you are looking to do, take that courageous step, because courage is always rewarded. Until next time, live big, love bigger.
A lot of people missed out on my recent offering because they simply weren't on my investor list. Being on my newsletter list won't provide you with access to the deals I have. This is because 506B regulations require you and I actually discuss your investment goals before I can show you the deals I have. If you're on the fence about investing in apartments, schedule a call today at 3keysinvestments.com. If you think you're new, so you don't want to be on an investor list, you're missing out on opportunities to refine your ability to review offerings, because you simply will never see them. So head over to 3keysinvestments and schedule a call.